You may have picked up on the theme of doom and gloom in today's texts. For some reason, we do this at the end of the church year, and we do it this year with Matthew specifically because there's lots of weeping and gnashing of teeth in Matthew, which you don't find in the other gospel texts. Matthew specifically has lots of weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I think in some sense he's echoing the Old Testament, overall the Old Testament view of God is that God's love is everlasting and steadfast, and God's anger only lasts a moment. I mean, that's the predominant view of God in the Old Testament. But then you get a text like Zephaniah, right, where God is saying, you rich, wealthy, Israelites, you've been given everything, and here you are, you've been drinking your wine, and now you're resting on your dregs. You're basically in a drunken stupor, and you don't believe that God will do good, and you don't believe that God will do harm. You don't believe either. You think God is powerless, right? Therefore, you shall know the power of God, and it shall be wrath and destruction, is basically what happens. And your blood will be poured out like dust, and your skin will be like dung. It's a text that I think is meant to wake you up, right? And but it does so by making you afraid. It's a text that plays on fear. And I think Matthew's text does the same thing. It's wrestling with fear. It's playing with fear. It begins the story where there's a man who goes away, and he invites his three servants, his three slaves to come, and he hands them his wealth, these talents, right? 5 talents, 2 talents, 1 talent. And, we forget how much money that is. A talent is the equivalent of 15 years worth of wages. So you have to think, if let's say an average year's worth of wage is $50,000, 1 talent would be $750,000. 2 talents would be $1.5 million. 5 talents would be $3.75 million. Right? Now you're getting a sense of what's happening here, right? The master is saying here, he brings them forward and he gives to each according to their ability. And to the one man, he says, here's $3.75 million. Go do something with it. And the man goes. There's a sense where he gets a glint in his eye, and he hears the sense of adventure, and he goes off and he invests $3.75 million. He gets to play with it. Right? And there's a sense he enjoys that. And who wouldn't? If you like to invest and you like to do that sort of thing, what a gift to have somebody else's money to play with, right? And so he goes and he plays and he starts begin trading. And then the second man comes along and the master gives him $1.5 million or 2 talents. And the same thing happens. He gets excited. He's like, oh, cool. All right, I'm going to go invest $1.5 million and see if we can make some money and see if we can raise it. And then the third one comes along and the master gives according to his ability. He knows that the third one is challenged somewhat. And so he only gives him 1 talent. Here's $750,000. Go see what you can do with it. And goes and buries it in the ground. There's a sense of almost like it's a weight. It's a burden. He doesn't know what to do with it. He doesn't know how to deal with it. So he goes and buries it in the ground. After a long time, the master comes back. He talks to the first man and he's like, hey, how'd it go? What'd you do? And the guy's like really excited because he's at 100% return on his investments over that time, which is great. So instead of $3.75 million, he now has, I think it's $7.5 million. And there's this sense of joy, and the master says, you're a trustworthy servant, right? And here, enter into the joy. There's this feeling of, again, excitement between the two of them and this sense of trust between the two of them. And so he calls the second man and he's like, well, how'd it go? And, the guy with $1.5 million also had 100% return. He hands him $3 million. And again, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been trustworthy. Enter into my joy. And then he calls in the third guy. And the third guy is like, dusting off the sand and the dirt off of the talent, right? Because it's been buried in the ground. It's like, here you go. I knew you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not gather seed. And this is the part of the parable that I'm not sure what to do with. The rest of it, right? I mean, the hard part of it, where the master is like, so you knew that this is what you thought I was like, right? Well, all right, so I'm going to be harsh. I mean, you get exactly what you thought I was. Why didn't you at least give it to the bankers? Do something with it. But because you thought, but if you were expecting, I mean, you were living out of fear. And since you were living in fear, you get what you were afraid of. You're going to be thrown in the outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Which, I think part of what I find most problematic is we're inclined to see God in the, we see this as an analogy to who God was, and that is so inconsistent with the character of God as it's presented throughout the scriptures. Even as it is in Thessalonians, you know, Paul writes, you know, the day of the Lord of coming and it's going to be wrath, but you are not destined for wrath. There's a sense about the judgment of God that it depends upon your position. Like if you expect the judgment of God to be punitive and punishing, you kind of get the God that you are asking for, the God that you're living in. But if you know that God actually is trustworthy and good, like the way that I'm making sense of it is the man who lives in fear suffers with fear, and he suffers with consequences of fear. The man who lives with a sense of the goodness of God, or the sense of the goodness of the master, a sense of the goodness of things, actually gets, that's the reality that plays out for him. You know, if I was a fire and brimstone sort of preacher, and we were a fire and brimstone sort of congregation, this would be a great stewardship text. Right? You better pledge 10% or else there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth in store for you. Fortunately, we're not that kind of congregation, and I'm not that kind of preacher. Because that kind of theology is really based on fear. It's about threatening you. It's about making you believe in God or doing something with the threat of hell hanging over you. Which I don't think is a good way to motivate people. And I don't think it's accurate of the reality of who God is or the reality of our lives. The reality of our lives is that our lives, we have been so deeply blessed. We've been given such good gifts. And it doesn't mean we don't struggle. And it doesn't mean we don't have dark days. And it doesn't mean that there's not strife and turmoil and difficulty in our lives. But despite those things, there's still such deep goodness to our lives. And then, who are we going to be as a people? Are we going to be a people who kind of live with a sense of scarcity and fear? Are we going to live as a people who actually know the goodness of God and who are grateful for the goodness of our lives? My hope is that we can live out of that sense of goodness. And I think that's a journey. I think that's an ongoing process, that all of us at some moments have moments of fear and living out of fear versus living out of a sense of abundance and trust. And I remember when it was first made clear to me, I was where I was at on that continuum. Because I think it can happen no matter where you're at, no matter what your economic status. I know rich people who have such a sense of abundance in their lives. And they give abundantly and generously. And I know rich people who have such a sense of scarcity. And I know poor people who have such a sense of abundance and they give generously even though they don't have a lot to give. And I know poor people who have such a sense of scarcity. When I was in Africa, when I first went to Africa with my family in Liberia, I was 18 years old. And I was always struck when I would go to the village and people were so welcoming, their sense of hospitality. And I'd walk into somebody's home and the average wage in that village was a dollar for a hard day's worth of labor, you would get a dollar. And so I'd walk into somebody's home and they wanted to greet me. And so they would go out and they'd buy a pop for 25 cents or a soda for 25 cents, which is a quarter of a day's wages. If you think about that. That's how much they spent to buy me a pop, to make me feel welcome. Even, and there are times I didn't want to drink the pop, quite honestly, but I didn't want to refuse their generosity and their hospitality. And they'd make a nice plate of food, and you know, and I was always humbled by the generosity and their giving out of their own poverty. My brother and I played on the town soccer team. And, you know, some of these guys didn't have shoes to wear. Some of them just played barefoot. And even sometimes the ones who had shoes didn't have socks to go with the shoes. And sometimes even the ones who had socks only had like one pair of socks, right? I had 7 pairs of socks. You know, they were those white crew socks with the broad, you know, the white with the color bands around them, right? They were so cool back in the day. And because they were different colors, the guys on the team could see that, wow, I wear different pairs of socks each day, and they're white and they're clean. And so one day, one of these guys comes up to me, and he's like, hey, do you mind if I don't have a pair of socks? Do you mind? Would you give me a pair of your socks? And my response was, well, I only have 7. I mean, I only had enough to get me through laundry day, right? You're like one for every day of the week, and there's laundry day and whatever. And if I give one away to you, then I won't have enough to get me through the week. I won't have a fresh pair of socks to wear every morning, right? You're appreciating the insanity of this, right? But I was one of the richest guys in town. And I had such a sense of scarcity. I was living out of scarcity even though I was wealthy. I had 7 socks, they had none. Right? What kind of people do we want to be in this world? You know, the ancient Israelites, God gave to them, you know, out of their sense of goodness. Like, they worked hard farming. They worked hard raising animals. But when the harvest came, they gave the first fruits of their harvest just out of a sense of gratitude that they were so deeply blessed. And that later became 10%, right? 10% of whatever they had. And that didn't seem like an onerous amount to them. It was just like, it's the goodness of God in their lives. And they rejoiced in the giving. I think we're called to live out of the goodness that we've received. We're called to live out of the joy of who God is and what we've been given. My hope is that we can be a people who live out of a sense of abundance rather than a sense of scarcity. Amen.